discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square, and finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
It's a story of unconventional faith. From the weather studios of some of the biggest TV markets in the country to a voluntary exit from a prominent role in an effort to follow God's direction for his young family. We head on the road today with Jared Sebesta, a man who self-describes on his website in this fashion. He's tall, he tries to be funny, he talk good on TV. So I think you can tell already, this is going to be an enjoyable exchange of views. Jared Sebesta is an award-winning meteorologist. He's worked at KDLT-TV in Sioux Falls, at KPNX-TV in Phoenix, and most recently at Care 11 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's a prominent motivational speaker and social media mogul. Also, Jared is a MyFaithRadio.com blogger on the topic of finance. And we begin our conversation on this edition of Faith Radio's On the Road with Jared's explanation of his unconventional departure from the Twin Cities Care 11 TV just this last summer.
I think the way that I left was very uncommon. And for people to leave TV, and especially Care 11. I mean, people, if you're just not familiar with Care 11 is a very special place. It's the following that Care 11 has is unlike any TV station I've ever seen in the nation, for that fact. And I was there for 4.5 years, and I came onto the scene pretty strong, and I have this tremendous following of people, and for some reason people connected with my kind of quirky, sarcastic sense of humor on the air. And in the midst of all of this, while everything was, I mean, I was banging on all cylinders. And in the midst of all that, I told them that I was leaving. And not only leaving, leaving with no other job to move back to South Dakota. And that was the story. That's how it all went down.
And I should ask, too, you, one of the things that I saw written about was that your love of family and your love of your homeland was a big reason for that as well. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I started my career in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I met my wife there, and we left, got married. I got a job in Phoenix, Arizona. We started our married life as a fresh married couple out in this foreign land of Arizona that neither one of us had even ever been to. And ever since we left, we were kind of always drawn back to South Dakota. You know, when we were out in Phoenix, we would go on vacations, and we really wouldn't take these abstract vacations. I mean, we were married with no kids, and both making an income, and we, more times than not, we would fly into Sioux Falls, South Dakota, just because we loved it. We still had friends and family there, and people were like, why don't you, you should go to L.A. and go to Vegas and go over to San Diego, and most of the time, we would always make plans and go to Sioux Falls. We just loved it there.
Let's talk a little bit about blaming Jared, and specifically the hashtag on Twitter.com, Blame Jared. This is quite something because it's one of the things you've become known the most for. Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit, take us back to the moment when Blame Jared happened?
Well, if you're from this part of the country, especially Minnesota, you know our weather is probably some of the worst in the world. like I have no idea why people continue to live in this part of the country. I mean, really? I mean, if... I always tell people that I always ask people, like, why do you live here? You know, they're like, oh, I just love the weather here. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you really have to be kidding me. Like, the weather here is nearly inhospitable 9 months out of the year. Let's just be honest, you know? And so I that's kind of my attitude that I took to TV lots of times. And if, again, the last couple of winters have just been awful, I mean, I think Donald, there's really much more way to describe the last couple of winters.
Nope, that works.
Horrible winters, and our springs have been purely non-existent. You know what I mean? Like, it's always funny because they're like, oh, you know, spring starts March 23rd. And I'm like, but does it matter? Because the calendar says spring doesn't mean that it's actually spring, you know? Well, anyway, a couple of years ago, we were going through just an awful winter as usual. And it was in April, and we ended up having like 3 major snowstorms in the Twin Cities that particular April. This is 2012. And I was working on a Friday afternoon, and we were forecasting a little bit of rain for the afternoon commute, and it turned into about 2 inches of snow. And what 2 inches of snow will do to an afternoon commute in the Twin Cities is that it'll make it come to a complete halt. And after the winter that we had just experienced, people were absolutely beside themselves. You could just sense all this anger growing, you know, in the streets because of how just awful our winter was. And now it was transitioning right into this particular spring. And it was a Friday, and people wanted to get home, and they were stuck in traffic because of 2 inches of snow, not rain, snow, in April. And our weekend sports guy at the time, he tweeted something to the effect of, he goes, my favorite part about all this weather is about all the hate tweets that people send Jared, hashtag blame Jared. And that was actually sent at about 3 o'clock on that Friday afternoon. Mm. And by 5, 6 o'clock that evening, the hashtag blame Jared was going absolute gangbusters. And by 10 o'clock that night, it was actually trending nationally on Twitter. The hashtag right below me that was trending, I was in the number 4 spot. And in the number 5 spot right below me was a KFC, a Kentucky Fried Chicken hashtag. You can't make this up.
No, you could not. I think it would take a very creative person to attempt making that up.
Well, that was always the greatest thing about Blame Jared. I didn't create it. You know, it wasn't like we had a marketing meeting that morning and we're like, okay, here's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to create this hashtag and blah, blah, blah. It just happened. And the beautiful thing about it is that in other states, Blame Jared really doesn't work as well. It works perfectly in Minnesota because our weather is so bad. You know what I mean? And, like, people love to complain. People love to complain about the weather in any part of the country.
Yes, sir.
And in Minnesota, we love to complain about it. And so you just need a target. And so I became the target for everybody's resentment and bitterness towards the weather. And the beautiful thing about it, too, is that it wouldn't work with just anybody. If you know any of the other weathercasters in the Twin Cities, they are typically a little bit older, which is not a knock. That's just they're just a little bit older. Sure. I'm in my 30s. I'm young. I'm sarcastic. I kind of take on, like, my one of my motivations in just my attitude that I just take into life and on the air, it actually is taken from an old show, and you may have heard of this. Married with Children. Do you remember that old sitcom back on Fox back in the 90s?
And Sure.
Okay, and that the star of that was Ed O'Neill, and he played a character called Al Bundy.
Sure.
Okay. If you've ever watched that show, his attitude is always like, you know what I mean? His wife Peggy would come at him about something. He'd just be like, he just shrug his shoulders, So that was kind of that's kind of like my motivation.
Understood.
And so that actually played into the fact of people just taking shots at me left and right, you know, complaining about the weather, and I'm just like, whatever. Hey, you got stuck in traffic 2 hours today? Blame me. Whatever. And so it was just this perfect storm that came together, and here we are a year and a half later, and Blame Jared still continues to go strong, and it's pretty much become kind of a personal brand. I mean, if I go out in public, you know, to a Twins game or something, people are like, hey, Blame Jared, woo! You know, so it's pretty funny.
Well, I must say that before I was aware of you as a human being, I did know about Blame Jared, so I am part of that wider cultural phenomenon.
It's kind of funny, too, because you get it, and it's every once in a while, about once a week, I have somebody come up to me in the grocery store, like an elderly couple, and and they'll be like, oh, I just think it's terrible that they blame you for everything. And I'm like, I'm like, no, it's okay. I can handle it. I'm good, you know, and I actually want, you know, of course I want people to blame me. I don't want it to go away. You know, I mean, it would be the worst thing for me is that if our weather was really great and nobody ever blamed me again for the horrible weather. But as you know, that's never going to happen.
It is a fairly amusing relationship, isn't it? Because on the one hand, we're so hardy and we like to remind ourselves that we can't complain about it because we either moved here or we grew up here.
Right.
So we knew what to expect. But we do complain all the time, don't we?
We love to complain about it, but we're very passive-aggressive people here. We want to say that we don't like to complain, but really we do. And so, again, Blame Jared is this great outlet for people to take all their, you know, resentment and just kind of gives them a way to go onto Twitter and Facebook and express their displeasure with Mother Nature. Now, it doesn't just apply to the weather. I've gotten blamed for pretty much anything and everything. In fact, a lot of the tweets that were going out that first night actually had nothing to do with weather.
That's fascinating. You talk about the difference social media makes on our society. Here's a man who's lived it, Jared Sylvester, joining us on the road today. He's a meteorologist, hard word to say, motivational.
Yeah, hard to spell, too. I can't ever spell it on the first try.
You get it on the second normally?
The second or third, usually. If I hit it on the first try, I'll actually tweet about it and say, hey, I just spelled meteorologist correctly on the first try. Go me.
He's also a motivational speaker and, as we've been discussing, a social media mogul and a MyFaithRadio.com blogger. He talks a lot about money, finance, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, Mr. Sylvester, take us back to the beginning. What was a childhood like in Chippewa County, Minnesota?
No, it was good. It was life on the prairie, and I actually grew up in a trailer home for most of my upbringing, and I think that kind of played into my fascination with weather, and I was always deathly afraid of the weather, and to this day, still am, and my mother was the complete opposite, and that always bothered me, you know, because it was me and my mother in this trailer home throughout much of my childhood, and the wind would be blowing so strong, you know, that you could feel our trailer home, like, shifting, and I'm like, Mom, we got to get out of here. And then she'd be like, no, it's just a little thunder shower. No big deal. You know, she grew up on a farm in South Dakota back in the, you know, back in the day where you'd have just these humongous thunderstorms. So yeah. Nothing ever seemed to scare her, but it always scared me. And that's, I think that kind of led into my either fascination or fear of the weather. And that's probably how I ended up in this field.
You said something I found quite fascinating there. You said you essentially are still a bit afraid of the weather today. What did you mean by that, and how does it play into your...
It freaks me out a little bit. I mean, if you ever watch Care 11, we're actually outside.
Yeah.
So we do weather from the Care 11 backyard, and if there's ever, like, thunder and lightning back there, I'm like, I'm not going to go back out there. Are you crazy? I'm not going to get struck by lightning. You know, I mean, and some people just don't seem to... It doesn't seem to bother them. I mean, my heart still seems to kind of pitter-patter when... You know, when the skies get dark and the wind comes up, it's still very emotional for me, and it just kind of gets my blood to flow.
Well, it's a fascinating disclosure, but I imagine as well that the technology you have available today obviously is better than you've ever had to forecast what the weather is going to be. Is it overwhelming in a way, or does it kind of all make sense to those of you who know what you're talking about as much as you do?
Well, I mean, the technology has come around, and forecasting has certainly improved. I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years, and I remember when I first started, some of the tools that I had then compared to what I use now are different. And I think that the forecasting, the accuracy and the how pinpoint, you know, some of the models that we use and some of the weather graphics that we use, it's crazy. Like, in the short term, I'm talking like 6 hours out. You know what I mean? Like, right. We'll use a model, like, and it'll go into the future hour by hour. And sure enough, like, almost identical, that's what would happen. And that would almost blow my mind. You know, but the longer range stuff really hasn't changed a lot. You know what I mean? There's some things that have changed, but a lot hasn't. I think people think we have these special computers. I got that all the time, by the way. They're like, well, you got all those, you know, Doppler 4000.
Yes.
And all those. You know, you got all your Dopplers and all
yes.
your computers there, and you can't figure out if we're going to get an inch of snow tomorrow or not. You know, and you're never right anyway. And so I just want to clarify here on the radio that we do not have special computers, okay? And if a station says they have Doppler 4000, it really doesn't make any difference. There's nothing special about what we have to use. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Most of the stuff that we use is all internet-based anyway.
Wow.
So there's really nothing special that a TV station has to forecast the weather.
It's a frank and enjoyable discussion with Mr. Jared Sylvester. He is a prominent motivational speaker, social media mogul, and, of course, meteorologist for many years across these United States. Now I want to turn the corner a little bit and start talking about your faith. What point in your life, Jared, did your faith start becoming something that was important to you?
Mostly college. I was up at University of North Dakota, played basketball up there. A good friend of mine to this day, he started a Bible study when I was playing basketball and started going to his Bible study, and that's kind of when it all started for me. And to this day, I was actually, his name is Corey, and he was the best man at my wedding, and I was the best man at his wedding, and we've kind of kept in contact all these years and remain really good friends. So it was back in college.
The intersection of of faith in Jesus and the career that you've had in media is something that I'm especially fascinated by, because staying humble is difficult for most everybody when they find something that they're good at. Now, you found something you're good at that people watch you on every night, thousands of people. How did you stay humble when you'd have scenarios where people would come up to you, blame Jared aside, and say, I love you, I watch you on TV, you're a very important person?
It's very tough. It's very tough, because I would be the first to admit that being on TV, especially at a Care 11, the connection that was made with people at in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota and Wisconsin, from me being at Care 11 was unmatched. And to this day, even though I don't even work at Care 11 anymore, when I go out, I mean, people want pictures and they want autographs. And I will be the first to admit to tell you that that strokes your ego big time.
Yeah.
Big time. Especially for a guy. And you have to intentionally fight through that a lot. And there have been seasons, you know, periods, whether it be a day or a couple of hours, maybe several days in a row, where I'd just be bummed out, you know, especially since I left Care 11. And, you know, I loved the limelight. I loved it, you know, and I loved being that guy. I loved being the kind of the kooky weather guy in Care 11 that people just seemed to enjoy, and the whole blame Jared thing. And so to answer your question, how did I do it? I still struggle. I struggle with it, and I still struggle with it. But a lot of the time, I have to kind of always keep in the back of my mind, okay, where do I find my identity?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is my identity as a Care 11 employee weather guy, or is it in something bigger? You know what I mean? And so that is something that I have to kind of continually and intentionally sort through, kind of navigate through.
And you're in a season of your life now that is unlike what you have been through in the past years of jumping from station to station, I imagine. What is God teaching you in this different season of your life, would you say?
Whew, that's good. I think a lot of that has to do with what we just talked about. You know, I could have stayed at Care 11. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like we had a bad negotiation and it went sour and they booted me out, or they got fired, or they just, you know, they did away with me. I loved working there. I think that they loved me as an employee. I felt in our life there was something lacking, and a lot of that had to do with family time. My wife and I spoke about this, or we talked about this behind closed doors for literally dozens and dozens and dozens of hours leading up to me leaving Care 11. And one thing that we talked about was, you know, what is the life that we want? What is the life we see? What's the environment we see raising our kids in? And how can we have that and work at Care 11? And we came to the conclusion that the life that we ultimately wanted, we could not have while I worked at Care 11 and did TV in the Twin Cities. And so that was the reason I left. And so for me to be able to put my career and even my pride and my ego and put that aside and do that for my family, because we felt like it was what we were called to do. We felt very called to leave Care 11. And be able to navigate through that, I think that's probably the biggest lessons. And again, I'm dealing with it as we speak right now.
Sure.
Not something that I've dealt with. It's kind of like something that I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. So this is a lesson that's kind of, it's ongoing, and it's certainly going on even today.
I want to talk a little bit about your financial ministry with the advice that you give. You write blogs at myfaithradio.com. What led you to this scenario where you're giving folks some really strong advice on their finances?
It actually started when we were going through our premarital counseling, and when we were actually living in Sioux Falls before we moved to Arizona. And one thing, I feel kind of bad because we went through all this premarital counseling, and there's like one thing that I remembered. Is that bad? Is that bad? But one of the things that our pastor told us, he said, he goes, when you get down to Phoenix, he goes, you're probably going to want to join like a young married couple's Bible study. He goes, you can do that, but don't do that right away. Or if you do that right away, also do this. He goes, look up Dave Ramsey. And we got down to Phoenix. We were about ready to buy a house. Of course, we didn't take our pastor's advice and look up Dave Ramsey right when we got down here, but we started looking at homes. We were pre-approved for a loan. Everybody was telling us to buy a house, and something just did not feel right with me. And so I looked up this guy, Dave Ramsey, which our pastor told us to do, and I started reading some of his stuff and looking at his videos. I bought his books the next day. We got them, and I read them in like a day, and I read them with my wife, and we talked about it, and we decided not to buy a house. Instead, we decided to pay off all of our debt and save. That's exactly what we did. We spent 3 years in Phoenix. We saved like crazy people. I got a job in Care 11 in the Twin Cities. We came up here. We put down 50% cash on our first house. We continued to save. And to this day, even leaving Care 11, being able to financially walk away from a highly lucrative job with no job waiting for me and two kids, and being able to walk away and being able to sustain that and withhold that, I guess, you can trace all of that back to the decisions that we made back in 2007 by getting out of debt. But being able to do that financially, I don't think a lot of people in America have that power. That is tremendous power to make radical life decisions for your life and for your family if you feel called to do so. But it starts a lot with a lot of the ways that we handle money, and that's why I'm so passionate about it.
Well, and you can definitely tell just as one hears you talk about it, but you wrote just several weeks ago on the MyFaithRadio.com site about student loans, and it stuck out to me because of what you just said. You made the comment that in your mind, college debt is crippling this generation. Could you speak to that a bit?
I think that, you know, that generation, you know, your lower 20s, I mean, I remember back when I was in my lower 20s, I mean, these people they're young adults, they're coming out of college, and they want to take the world by the tail.
Yeah.
And they want to. And the fact of the matter is that no matter how much you want to, if you have $100,000 of student loan debt weighing on you every day, that is going to absolutely be nothing more than an anchor, and it's going to withhold you from becoming everything that you are called to be in this life. You know, I think now they're kind of cracking down on missionaries and having debt, you know, because, you know, again, you have a missionary that you want to go across the world and, you know, preach the word to all these remote countries. The reality is that if you've got $80,000 worth of student loan debt, as you're trying to raise support to do these things, your support that you're raising is purely just paying off a student loan payment, not going towards sending you to the abstract ends of the earth. That's a problem. And I'm telling you from experience that when you ditch the debt, the one thing that you get when you do that is freedom. You can free to go. If you want to leave Care 11, you go. If you want to go across the world as a missionary, you go. You want to go change the world in whatever way, shape, or form that looks for you, you go. You have student loan debt or debt in general, that thing is going to be a bowling ball and a chain hanging off your ankles for however long it is you've got that around. I'm highly passionate about that.
It's really fascinating stuff, and you can read the full blog, too, at myfaithradio.com when you just look for Jared Sebesta. But in that same blog, just to what you were speaking to, Jared, you say, spending $60,000 on a degree that produces a $30,000 per year job, which, frankly, is pretty average as well, but you say it's stupid in capital letters.
And that's where, like, we just got to get real. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm certainly not anti-education. I'm just anti-debt. You know, and you know, there's got to be ways. There's ways out there where we can have get your education, but not walk out with this tremendous ball and chain. There's just got to be a way. You know what I mean? It's tough. You know, and I've been there. I was 20 years old once. You know, going up in the student loan center and just signing a paper, and that was a $10,000 loan, and not even missing a beat. You know what I mean? But you know, something's kind of got to be done, and I don't know if that's education or what it is, but you know what that does to these young, motivated kids coming out of college is awful, and it just kind of drives me crazy.
Last question: what's next for Jared Sebesta?
I've had more family time than I've had in 4 years, and my son has absolutely come out of his shell. He's been around his cousins all month, and I've watched that boy just come out of his shell. He's just about 4 years old, and so right now I am just enjoying life to its full right now, and I know there's an opportunity out there. It's just a matter of time. So in the meantime, we just stay strong and hang out with family and just love it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much to you, Jared, sir. We wish you all the best. God bless you, sir. And once again, we thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're listening to Faith Radio's On the Road. Stories of determination, courage, and hope.
The I just found that to be a refreshing discussion about true purpose, about being willing to go when God leads, and also about identity, where we are in life, not defined by what our job title is, but by who we are in whose we are. So we thank Jared Sebesta once again. We want to congratulate him on some new titles that he has achieved since we had the chance to talk, including he's become the Director of Marketing and Public Relations for Tages Financial Group out of Wilmer, Minnesota. And additionally, he's working with BringMeTheNews.com, covering weather, of course, something, both things really, finances and weather, he's very passionate about. As always, you can find him on Twitter at Jared Sebesta and at JaredSebesta.com. That's J-E-R-R-I-D and Jared. Thanks once again for joining us this edition of On the Road. We'll talk to you again next Saturday morning.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.